The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Happy Monday, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another installment of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Going to do a quick recap of the weekend series. The Red Sox took 2 out of 3 against the Angels, leaving us in third place in the AL East standings, currently 3 games behind the New York Yankees. Joining us tonight is Charlie Smith out of Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. Charlie, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Cody, for asking. You know, real talk, this is a pretty exciting weekend. I think once we're done with the intros, do have one thing I'd like to say, but really, really happy that the Red Sox were able to take this series after an ugly last series.
An exciting series indeed. Also joining us tonight from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Terry, how are you doing tonight?
Doing all right. Red Sox did a little bit better than I originally anticipated. I had the Angels winning games 1 and 3 of that series, and the Red Sox ended up taking the finale. Weirdly, I kind of picked the Cooper Criswell game to to be the win, and it was, but they kind of surprised today. But other than that, got my butt kicked all weekend at cribbage. Nothing to write home about, but how are you guys?
Yeah, no complaints, but I mean, Terry, let's not just keep it there. Weren't you also getting your butt kicked in fantasy baseball too?
No.
Or were you winning this week?
No, I won.
You winning?
I beat Max.
Oh, you won. Nice. You like actually beat Max.
Like
wow.
The GOAT.
That's your shout out. You actually, you lost. Anyways, I think before we get started, and Terry, where can we find the podcast?
Oh, good call. At Bastards_Boston, you can find my personal Twitter handle at CushmanMLB. I do have a baseball only Facebook account called Terry Talks Sox. So you can find that as well if you're a Facebook only person.
Yeah, no, right on. So for mine, for those that want to chirp me, Smith_MLB. I think before we talk, we're obviously all baseball fans. We love the game. We love it. You know, there are highs and lows. And as a Boston Red Sox fan this year, there are a lot more lows. But one of the big things that really, I think, separates our pod from others is that, you know, we interact with our fans and sometimes we interact with our haters. And I think we interact with those that are maybe in between. And I interact with both. I interact with the people that love us and the people that may not like us or may not like certain people on our podcast. And there's one person I just wanted to shout out for just being, I think, open and transparent. And this is the first time I've actually had a real conversation to Justin MLB, who had publicly shared that he was struggling with, you know, mental health, kind of struggling over the past couple of days and whatnot. And for those that are suffering, that listen to us, that have experienced this or know somebody that's going through a hard time, talk about it, you know, safe space. We're all human beings. At the end of the day, we don't want anyone to suffer. So for those that are having issues, there is a hotline for you if you are struggling. You call 988, you can text that number, you can chat with that number. They will help you with resources. If you want to know some of the apps that I used when I was dealing with some other issues of mine during COVID and beyond, there are resources out there for you. And so this is kind of just a shout out to say, you know, Justin, I'm with you. You're not by yourself. We may not be, you know, 100% simpatico on everything, but that's okay. At the end of the day, I just hope that you're okay. And to those that I'm not personally shouting out right now, I hope that you're okay too. And just, again, know that you're not alone and there are resources and people out there to help support you.
It is important to show up for each other. You know, mental health is no light matter, Charlie. And I think, you know, it's very important to bring that up and, you know, to essentially highlight some of the resources that are there for individuals that might be struggling. The last thing we want to see is people struggle in silence and feel like they're all alone, because that's not the case. You know, there are, you know, many resources, many individuals that dedicate their life, you know, to those battles, to those challenges. And it's very important to make sure that, you know, we do what we can to make sure that people don't feel like they are alone. On a more, I guess, upbeat note, we did win 2 out of 3. So getting into the segment, we get to go studs first, which is always exciting. Charlie, why don't you lead it off with your stud from the weekend?
Yeah, so for my stud, it was the Game 3 starting pitcher. Brian Baio had his best performance of the year, went 5 1/3 innings, went almost 110 pitches, had more than 67% of his pitches go for strikes, struck out 8 guys, which is Terry's favorite statistic in starting pitchers. He loves those punch outs. He's a big, big proponent for that. Only walked a couple, gave up 1 home run. Best line is, you know, outside of that home run, 1 run on 5 other hits. Total line, 2 runs, 6 hits, pair walked, 8 strikeouts in 5 1/3. Undoubtedly his best start of the season, and kind of coming at a time where we just kind of got exposed and slapped around, but the Boston Red Sox have the best starting ERA in Major League Baseball. Today, for those that were listening, they said it was 1.97 or 1.98 starting pitcher ERA, the best in Major League Baseball. So my stud, Brian Baio. Terry?
You know, his first 3 innings actually weren't very good. He ended the third with 69 pitches. So I'm like, oh, here we go. Just another Brian Baio start where he just wasn't really a step forward or a step backwards. It was looking like a step sideways, really. And then Andrew Bailey came out for a mound visit. This was actually around 65 pitches. And it just kind of fixed Baio. His command was better. He was a lot more efficient. And just started kind of punching guys out left and right. And I don't know if you covered it, Charlie. He was around, 107 pitches, I think, on the day?
107 pitches, 72 pitches for strikes. He did, I mean, as you mentioned, you know, as a whole, to you know, my entire stud was Brian Baio collectively. As you mentioned, kind of struggled a little bit out of the gate, but really started hunkering down, had no problems getting punch outs. Just a fantastic for the performance overall of the day. Not everything was perfect, but overall he did great.
And this is a lineup where, you know, if you're trying to get yourself right, there's not too many threats. You got Ohapi, you've got Mike Trout, who hit a triple today, and you have Taylor Ward. And you got a couple of other guys that are decent. I mean, some of them, I mean, would be fine with the Red Sox lineup compared to some guys we're going to talk about, but it's not a super robust lineup. So this would be a start where you want to see Baio come out and really kind of assert himself. And he did, you know, in the second set of 3 innings, and it's good to see. And I don't know who we're playing after the Guardians, but he'll start Game 1 of the, you know, the weekend series, basically. So we'll see if he can kind of build on what he finished off with today.
Yeah, to answer, that's going to be the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's who he's going to be. He's going to be facing the Pittsburgh Pirates in Pittsburgh against Gonzalez. That's who they're going with.
That'll be a full test. Not a lot of meat left on that bone. For starters, the triple that Mike Trout hit was off of just a nasty pitch. I mean, that thing was like ankle high, and he just muscled it to center. I don't know what you do with that. Baio keeps taking steps in the right direction. Obviously, he finished the season pretty strong last year before, you know, kind of some injury and arm fatigue. Picked up very well in the spring training. Had a couple of rocky starts here and there to start the season, but nothing that really kind of kills you. Charlie, as you mentioned, the staff ERA for the starting rotation is very strong. I think the biggest bugaboo for Brian Bello at this point is, can he pitch in the daylight, right? Can he beat those he's a vampire allegations? And we're starting to see that, right? Like, his last two starts have both been daytime, and they've both been pretty strong performances. You guys mentioned Andrew Bailey's doing the Lord's work when it comes to the mound visits, when it comes to what he's doing with this rotation. Even Kenley was losing some command, losing some control, losing some confidence. Bailey came out there, they had a quick chat, and things kind of righted there in the ninth inning. So, I think we got to give some honorable mention shine to Andrew Bailey at this point. Maybe just a consistent honorable mention member if he's not on the studs list. But, it was a great start by Bayo. Anytime you can get past that fifth inning in any capacity, I think is going to be helpful. This bullpen is going to have a lot of innings on it this year. So, the farther that we can extend the starting rotation, the better. 69 pitches through three innings to be able to get into the sixth, I think, is huge. A stud-worthy performance, to say the least. Terry, who is your stud for the series?
I am going to go with our first baseman, Tristan Casas. Got off to a slightly slow start. Obviously, nothing compared to what we witnessed last year with that horrendous April and May start. But the dude seems locked in right now. And he's starting to hit the ball over the fence. He hit, I think it was the Saturday game, just crushed one, 435 feet, something like that. He's drawing walks quite a bit, drew three on the series. And then, of course, a home run today in the very first inning. So I like what I'm seeing. And he's almost looking like a guy who's been in the big leagues for a little while now. He looks like a fourth or fifth year veteran out there. I've got a ton of confidence in him every time he comes to the plate. The only bugaboo, unfortunately, is for some reason, a guy who hasn't even recorded a major league hit in 2024, Bobby Dalbec, is in the five hole. For the sheer fact he's a right-handed hitter, that's the criteria. That's the criteria you have to meet to be in the five hole. I mean, that's a critical spot. That's the last heart of the order guy that's going to try to drive in, the best part of your order here. And the reason it kind of frustrates me is, and I believe it was his final at-bat today in the finale, he didn't get anything to hit. They were just all outside the zone. And finally, he drew a walk. And they're not really afraid to put him on via the walk, because if Dalbec's coming up, what are they afraid of? It's an automatic out. And I think what ended up happening was Willy Abreu ended up pinch hitting for Dalbec. But still, I just wonder how much better Casas would be if he had a bona fide five-hole hitter right behind him. So it's hard to tell, but I love what I'm seeing, and the dude might be a monster. He could be maybe even more feared at some point than Rafi Devers is on some pitching staffs.
I don't know. I'd like to say that they're both going to be feared. And I think that, maybe for the first time in a really long time, there's the potential marriage of Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz 1-2 punch a la, you got both guys from the left side as opposed to one from the left and one from the right. I'm not really nervous about Tristan Casas doing his thing because, only a couple of hits in the series went 2-for-8, but both of them were big home runs. And made that comment thinking that, that home run that Ted Williams hit seems more and more like a myth because he said he absolutely nerfed that thing. And he was still shy by, I forget, like 60 feet or 50 feet, whatever it is. And he's like, he put everything into it and he just didn't get enough. So I don't think it's one. I don't think it's a myth. And two, I think Tristan Casas can keep going and maybe gets it within 20 feet, 15 feet. Who knows? The power is there. He's 24 years old. He's not even fully developed yet. And that's the exciting thing is Terry talked about how it took him a little while to kind of get with it and figure it out. And, you know, we all, Jason, you, myself, we all wanted him to go back down to AAA just to kind of figure it out and then be ready for being a member of the Boston Red Sox facing major league pitching. And this year has been a little bit of a turn. You know, you take those numbers into perspective. I mean, he's hitting a home run every four games on paper. So that's on, you know, worst case scenario, once every 16, 18 at bats. That's not that bad. That's pretty good. So at this pace, you're going to see a guy hit over 30 home runs and you're going to see him get over 90 RBIs. So if Tristan Casas can be a 30 to 35 homer guy and 100 to 110 RBI guy, you got your superstar left-handed hitter outside of Rafi Devers. Now, if we could just get a right-handed guy, oh, wait, we actually do have a right-handed hitter that can do that now, but not allowed to make him my stud for this week. To your point about Bobby Dalbec just seems, you know, Cody, I think you mentioned it on the last show, no one needs a change of scenery more than Bobby Dalbec. That's just case in point. 11 for 17 of his at-bats have gone for strikeouts, and in one of those strikeouts today, you see him and the pitch kind of dips in. It just clips the top left of that square, you know, outside top corner. And the umpire slow rolls a strike three. And Bobby D knows it. Bases loaded, two outs. They're not afraid to pitch to him. I'm shocked they give him a pitch that far up and out. But he was just like, you know what? The confidence is not there. And as he's going out, you can see him mouth the F word. Just like, oh, bleep. You know, just I can't get it. Like, I just cannot get a break. And I don't think there's going to be another major league team that takes a chance on Bobby Dalbec. If it's a team, it's probably the Los Angeles Dodgers that'll turn him into a 3,100 guy just with the luck that they've had with some of their past players. But, jokes aside, I think Bobby Dalbec's a AAA player at best. I feel bad, but it is what it is. To your point, though, Tristan Casas, great stud, will continue rocking, and I'm very excited to see what happens for his future.
The thing I think I'm most impressed with in terms of Tristan Casas is how willing he is to stay within himself. You never see a change in his approach. You never see a change in his routine, whether it be, you know, his at-bat routine, whether it be his pregame routine, whether it be, you know, how he composes himself. It's always consistent and it's always the same. Whether things are going good or whether things are going bad, you know that he's going to be consistent. He's going to be there through rain or shine, right? You know, they keep talking about it on the broadcast. You know, he'll step out of the box. He waits until about, I think, that 12 or 13 second mark. And then, you know, he does his breathing routine. He'll step into the box at 8 seconds. He addresses the pitcher. And then, you know, it's showtime. He was hitting singles at the beginning of the year. Wasn't really hitting for power. Didn't really have great pitches. But he was still, you know, putting the ball in play. He obviously has a great command for the strike zone. So he never feels like he's reaching, right? And all of these things make you so excited, right? Because as feared as Devers is, as excited as we are to watch his at-bats, what is the one, you know, kind of knock that we have against Rafi Devers? It's he's always trying to hit that five-run home run, right? He's always trying to go for the fences. That's not Casas. Casas is like, hey, look, if you're going to pitch me low and outside, I'll throw one over short. We'll just move it, you know, maybe be Dalbec, maybe be O'Neill, maybe be whomever. We're going to keep this lineup moving. He doesn't feel like he needs to pull everything for a home run. The quote about the red seat being a myth, you know, maybe there's some logic to it. Who knows? That's just kind of funny. And a little bit of the quirks and the personalities of the type of player that Casas is. It really breaks my heart to see, you know, Bobby Dalbec have it start kind of creeping in on him, right? You know, to see that frustration coming, I guess, bubbling up or coming to the front, because he has handled, we'll say, this stretch in Boston, I think, better than anybody we've ever seen handle the Boston media, right? This guy's been getting crushed left and right. He has not been producing. It's a brutal media market, and he has stayed positive. He has stayed upbeat. He has been consistent, and he is, you know, he's owned it too, right? He's not trying to skirt. He's not like, oh, I got squeezed by the ump today, or, oh, you know, this XYZ, like he's gone out and gotten glasses. He's tried different swings. He's, you know, gone to AAA whenever they needed him to, played shortstop when they needed him. He's done everything he can to be a contributing member of this baseball team. And, you know, Charlie, maybe he is a AAA player. Maybe he goes to the Dodgers and they figure it out, or whatever it is. But I don't know if you're going to find many guys in baseball that are as willing to do the things that Bobby Dalbec has done to try to remain just a part of an organization, to be a contributor on a team in any capacity, whether it be positive or negative. And it's just tough that, you know, it's not working out. You know, nothing against the guy. Hope for the best for him. Hopefully he finds his feet somewhere else, but it's been tough. Terry, you had something that you wanted to say.
Yeah, this is the quote from Casas, and it was after the game. He said, "That's my best ball for sure," Casas told reporters of his homer, which had an exit velocity of 111.9 miles per hour. Casas says, "I had hit one harder exit velo-wise last year, but that Ted Williams seat is starting to feel more and more like a myth." And the actual distance of this homer was 429 feet. The distance of the red seat is 502 feet. And that gets brought up a lot, you know, whether it's a myth, whether a player will ever hit one that distance again. And I think if you look at the juiced baseball era, which was probably 2016 through 2019, 2019 was the peak, the most home runs in a season in MLB history, and it still never reached the red seat. So, and I also remember Dustin Pedroia and David Ortiz saying they would try to do it in batting practice on balls that are just easy to hit, you know, and they still couldn't come close to it. So could it be a myth? Another thing is that big part of Fenway where all the offices are and where the broadcasters are, I think they initially called that the 406 Club when they built it in the late 80s, early 90s. That wasn't there, again, because the home run Ted Williams hit was in 1946. So 40 years before that part of Fenway was even built, some people speculate, well, maybe there was a wind that helped carry it that day. And it's crazy. And I don't know if it's a myth or not, but even if it's wrong, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it being a myth and not real, because it's still a cool story. It's something to talk about. And you know, it's a part of Fenway history. It's another reason to talk about Ted Williams, who's the greatest hitter in Red Sox history.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that is one of the unique things that baseball offers that not a lot of other sports do, is you still have relics in terms of the stadiums from eras, generations before, right? Like when you went to Old Yankee Stadium, or, you know, when you go to Fenway or Wrigley, you can be where some of the greats had played before, right? Like, didn't Mickey Mantle allegedly hit like a 600 foot home run outside of Old Yankee Stadium, like outside of everything?
Oh, like, I don't know.
Into like the neighborhoods or something like that. Like there's a crazy story about a Mickey Mantle home run that the numbers will absolutely blow your mind. But I do think it is, you know, a great thing to have, right? Like this is, I think, part of the charm of baseball is these stories and the ability to like see and understand and feel the presence of the history.
There's a line from, I haven't seen this movie, but I've heard the line referenced like several times, and it comes from the movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And the quote from it says, "When the legend becomes fact, print the legend." So the red seat has, you know, it's a legend, but it's become fact, and that's what they go with. So I'm fine with it, just because it's a cool enough story. And yeah, so I'm fine with it never being reached.
Easy enough. Anything else that you guys wanted to mention on Dalbec or Casas? Nope. All right, wrapping up the studs segment will be my stud for the series, and this is another player that is also heating up as of late, and this is Masataka Yoshida. 4-for-10 on the weekend, 4 hits, including his first home run in, you know, who knows how long, 4 RBIs, raised his average from 226 to 256. like I said, he's starting to heat up a little bit. This is a player that I've been kind of getting chirped on Twitter a little bit as well. Is he a glorified singles hitter? You know, we're committing $18 to $20 million a year. He's not playing any defense. Are we getting hosed? You know, is this guy already washed? Yada yada. He rolls over to second a bunch. Last year, it took him a little while for him to get adjusted as well and to get going, right? You know, last year we chalked it up to, hey, he's coming over from Japan. He's getting his sea legs underneath him. You know, he's getting used to the pitching, sure. And then he had a great summer, an unbelievable over-expectation type summer. So hopefully he's turning the corner a little bit. You know, nothing will be like tonic for your swing like Angels pitching, which I guess, you know, we are that tonic for Anthony Rendon, but that's another topic for a different discussion. But yeah, Yoshida's been turning around a bit. It's good to see him get the power stroke back. You know, this is a guy that doesn't strike out a lot, tries to draw some walks. And so, you know, if he continues to produce and to contribute, I think this lineup lengthens a bit more. Yes, he is another left-handed hitter, but it's good to see him kind of silence those haters and start doing some damage, driving in some runs and getting some of those extra base hits. Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty exciting game to say the least. I mean, this is a guy that going into today had 14 hits in 14 games. So he's averaging a hit a game. The problem is they're not really extra base hits. He's only had one or two until today. So finally got off the side, got that big home run. And actually earlier in the game, he had a deep rip to left center field that just didn't have the distance. So, you know, you're already talking about him heating up and whatnot. There are some people that were already calling for, you know, Yoshida to get the boot and to move on from him. And we're really limited on players that we can move. And Yoshida's not really one that I'm willing to commit to moving. I also don't think there's going to be too many teams that would be like, oh yeah, let's break the bank. Let's give you everything we've got to get him. So that being said, I'm quite content with what he's been able to do so far this year. It's not fantastic. It's not like he's the best player in the league, but you know what? That's not what you're paying him to be. You're not paying him to be the best player in the league. You're paying him to do a specific thing in the field and do another specific thing with a bat. And right now, I can't say anything bad about him. He's been a true professional handling his business. And you know what? If this is the slow start and he starts to heat up and get better, we're going to be laughing at the start of the season. So great work for Yoshida.
Terry?
Yeah, we were... He made the bottom five list on the midweek show, and you know we were kind of expressing some frustrations about it. And the thing I wanted to see the most with Yoshida, you know, to me the biggest part of the hype was his plate discipline and his ability to get on base in Japan in 2022, so his final year playing in that league. He had a 447 on base. Year before that, 449. Year before that, he split time between two teams. I'm not sure if that includes... Yeah, it does include two different leagues. 426. Season before that, and they had a full season, by the way, and this is 2020, 453. This is a guy who is an on-base machine in Japan. So... Is he going to get on base here in the United States in Major League Baseball with that clip? No, he's not. But I'm hoping for at least 330, 340 on base clip. Like, I would be extremely satisfied with that. Drawing walks. And if his plate discipline's that good, he's probably getting hits. He's probably hitting some doubles, sending some over the fence. So that's what I want to see. He did have a run driven in on, Friday. Oh, nope, my bad. Saturday. And it came on like a bloop hit. It just kind of sailed over the second baseman, got down. One run came in on that. And I was thinking, well, you know, it's good that he drove in a run, but it's still not what you want to see. And then today in the finale, one of his earlier at-bats, he hit a fly ball. It looked like it was going to go off the monster, at least possibly out, and it died right at the base of the monster. And I thought to myself, and I'm like, well, it sucks that it wasn't a hit, but maybe it's a sign. And then in his next at bat, that one went over the fence, that drove in two runs and ultimately won the game for us. So if that doesn't happen and we only score three, that possibly ends up being a loss, assuming the Angels still scored four. So it was a big hit from Yoshida, and hopefully it's the start of a decent run. He's been essentially missing in action since last June or July, really. His numbers really fell off. So let's hope it continues. And this Cleveland series, their pitching situation right now, at least for that series, not good. So this could be a nice opportunity for some continuation, not just for him, but for a lot of guys in the lineup.
Can I also say one more thing real quick too? It's now so incredibly important for some of the players in this team to begin getting hot, because we have now become another team that is starting to lose pitchers. The Boston Red Sox were not a team that lost a pitcher to, Tommy John surgery, but we've lost Pivetta for a little bit. There was that kind of like freak accident where Miguel Sanu landed on one of our players, and that's a 275-pound guy. That hurts when that falls on you. And I thought that wrist was broken. Last week we were posed with this question, is it possible? Will the Red Sox find themselves under 500? It's very, very possible that it could have happened if we did not take two out of three in this series, because it's not a cakewalk in this month. And I thought in my mind, when I'm kind of doing my mathematical analysis, what we're going to do and whatnot, we need to see certain players start to progress and start to kind of climb as far as not their value. Obviously value is important, but their kind of trajectory for the year and continue getting hot. There are certain things that I'm not expecting from certain players, and then there are other things that I'm going to continue expecting. Hopefully those players that are really hot don't cool off significantly, because if they do, it could get a little bit dicey. But if we don't do well in this series, I'm going to look pretty bad based on my analysis of last week's show. So I'll say that much.
Real quick, Terry, you kind of touched on it, Charlie. I think I know how Charlie essentially answered it, but if you have the opportunity to trade Yoshida, essentially just to free up the money, I do it in a millisecond. To free up the money and to hopefully at some point, if not this season, this winter, get a right-handed bat in there to balance us out, because we're lefty heavy. I mean, outside of O'Neill, the only guy you have is Connor Wong as far as righty hitters go. And he's actually hitting quietly over 300, and he had a great spring training. He was like the MVP of spring training. So in fact, and you want to talk about protection for Casas, I think it's Connor Wong. You put Connor Wong in that spot, I'm not saying it's perfect, but who else do you have, really? you can't put O'Neill there, because he has to hit in front of Casas and behind Devers. He's got to sandwich those two, split those two. So I don't know, but Yoshida is a guy I wouldn't hesitate moving if the opportunity presented itself.
I mean, the mental exercises of, if we move this guy, we can bring in another player, or we could use that money and allocate it towards another resource, I think is a false, expectation of this front office. They have proven time and time again that if they can slash the budget, they're just going to do that. And there's not going to be another move that's incoming. So at this point in time, if we have a major league player that's like a bona fide major league contributor, I mean, last year, 338 on base percentage, 290 average, 15 home runs, 72 RBIs, I'm not shipping him out. I don't care what we're paying him. We have a major league bat at the DH spot. I don't care if it's left-handed. We got to hold on to what we have, because it's proven time and time again that this ownership is not going to bring in talent, especially at that monetary value, right? And, while I absolutely agree with the idea of, if we can bring in a right-handed bat at that price point that would hold that value, that would be great. I just don't trust his ownership to do that.
Well, that's fair, and maybe they wouldn't. I'm perhaps foolishly operating with the mindset that they're gonna address some things this winter. I'm like 0-5 with that mindset, it seems like, in the last 5 years. But conventionally speaking,
correct.
I would
team
move.
Construction wise, I agree with you.
I would move him.
Much sense.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Two other guys that I think we should be talking about as far as additional studs for this week. Can we talk about how we've had an absolute, like another Rule 5 guy in Justin Slayton, who hadn't allowed a hit since Julio Rodriguez for 5 appearances, and comes out and gives us 2+ innings and is almost perfect again for someone that has literally zero experience, it feels like. And he's just been fantastic. Andrew Bailey, I think, Terry, you touched up on him earlier, coming out to kind of settle the nerves of our pitchers. Andrew Bailey came in and said, you know what? I want to come to Boston. I want to finish the work that I came here to do originally. I wasn't able to do it as a reliever, as a closer. He comes out after Kenley Jensen buzzes O'Hoppe with an up and in, then hits him, gives up a single that bloops in, then walks the third batter, and then Andrew Bailey comes out. I'm sitting here, and you guys saw me in the chat. I was not happy. I was a little upset. And he just comes in and does his job the way that we expect him to. I'm not going to lie. I was not feeling very confident. When you hit a batter, you give up a single, you get a walk. Anthony Rendon's up with the bases loaded, no out. So you're like, please get a double play or something. Sack fly. Now the runners are at second and third. I'm like, oh my God. Like, this is worst case scenario. Renfigo ended up having balls just barely go foul there. And strikes him out. Mike Trout comes up. I'm thinking worst case scenario, this game is probably tied. I'm thinking that's going to happen. And he comes out and he strikes out the last two guys. So you went from seeing Kenley Jensen kind of lose his focus, like really just almost lose himself as a closer. And the combination of his ability to stay locked in with Andrew Bailey's, I think, just complete understanding of what to say. And I have no idea what he said to him in that moment. I have no idea what was said back to him. But he comes back. You get a fly out, allow a run, okay? You get back-to-back strikeouts. Kenley Jensen had not allowed a hit all year. And so the only ugly thing about Kenley Jensen was the walks. The walks have been they're too common right now. The whip is ugly because he's walking a lot of guys. But I think it's a really, really good sign of what Andrew Bailey's been able to do so far, combined with, I think, the ability of the players that we currently have. And it's starting to come into fruition. I mean, this is a team that, you know, at the beginning of the year, we're trying to sell fans on the Red Sox experience, the Fenway experience, and we have to let the young kids play. Sometimes that's not going to work out. Sometimes that will. After 16 games, we're 9-7, folks. We're exceeding expectations of everybody. We're not number one in the league. We're not number one in our division, but we are at least holding our own, and we're finding pop in areas that we were not anticipating, we're not expecting regularly. And so our team went from being one of the biggest jokes. And believe me, there are going to be games that we play really poor and we're going to get 2 hits. And that's happened. But there are also going to be games where the Red Sox surprise us and make us happy, and we'll be able to celebrate those moments. So I'm really happy about both of those two guys, especially. I don't know if it's going to continue. I'll say this much. I am a little bit nervous about Chris Martin because he was lights out last year, and the odds of that happening 3 years in a row, being the last year with the Dodgers and this year along with last year in Boston, was very unlikely. The guy's 38 years old, and I think they just figured him out a little bit. So he's going to have to kind of revert back to what he was doing in 2023 to kind of be that elite seventh, eighth inning guy, because if he's not, Slayton is going to supplant you very quickly. I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, Martin is dealing with a shoulder thing, so perhaps that was part of the problem. I don't know if there's going to be an IL stint in the next couple of days, but a couple other guys in terms of honorable mentions. Cooper Criswell only lasted four innings, but did his job. You'll take that for a minor league call-up. Gave up two earned, struck out four, only walked one. I'm good with that. Another guy that's going to make things kind of interesting and perhaps complicated, but in a good way, Willie Abreu, kind of waking up, making hard contact. He drew a walk today that got him on first base, and I think he actually stole second on that. And he was the guy that came in on the Yoshida home run. So kind of a key at bat there that, you know, helped win the game. So the reason I say that's complicated is you have Rafaela, who did get a hit this series. That's the good news. The bad news, it was a very softly hit infield single. So I guess if you're going to start him in the infield, you have a spot for Abreu in the outfield. But I don't know. If it comes down to Abreu versus Rafaela and you're offensively anemic, it's going to be a topic of debate later on. And I wouldn't be shocked if Abreu ends up being a very productive outfielder, you know, a guy who hits 250, 260. Essentially, I hate that I keep comparing players to this guy, but I could see him being like a Hunter Renfro 2021, 2022 type player. I think he has that level of upside. He's got a good arm, but he's not, you know, he can be offline, you know, with his throws. So perhaps that's something that can be worked on. But I do see him very likely being a very serviceable offensive hitter in your lineup.
One thing I think we have to be wary of with Andrew Bailey, and believe me, he's absolutely deserving of being in the studs column, whether it be, you know, on an actual, you know, one of three or an honorable mention, but he's having the pitchers throw a lot of off-speed or secondary pitches, right? That's going to put a tremendous amount of strain on the elbow. You know, they're throwing the four-seam fastballs, the two-seam fastballs at a career low rate under the tutelage of Andrew Bailey. Now, we cannot argue with the results. The 1.98 ERA is incredible, but you know, it's something that I think that we're going to have to kind of monitor and manage throughout the season. I'm just saying this with an abundance of caution. I currently love what is going on with the program. I'm giving Andrew Bailey all the flowers in the world, especially after a person, you know, who flamed out here so poorly in Boston during his playing career to come back and kind of right those wrongs and kind of take it on the chin. You got to give the guy credit for doing that, because that is not very easy to do. Willie Abreu, you know, another guy that is, like you said, heating up, figuring it out. We would love to have these problems. So I think these are all, you know, very, very worthy honorable mentions. Anything you gentlemen else want to add in relations to honorable mentions on starts? Nope. Then we will flip it over to the unfortunate side of the coin, the duds of the weekend series. Charlie, who is your dud for the series? Charlie, you're on mute, my guy.
There we go. Should be unmuted now. Sorry about that. So 3-for-9 the series, Pablo Reyes. Couple singles, a double. Was caught stealing twice in one of the games of the series. Not really happy about that. So for me, I think it was more along the lines of just not being great on the base paths. The batting average was fine. You know, 3-for-9, not bad. An extra base hit, so you can't complain. Couple strikeouts, which is a lot less than some of the other guys on our team and league-wide. So for me, it was just a guy that, in my opinion, I don't know if I'd put him in the dub section or the dud section if you didn't get caught stealing twice and in the same game. So for me, Pablo Reyes.
Reyes had a defensive blunder in game one in the very first inning. Hauk could have been out of that inning literally in six pitches had the double play been turned, but Reyes mishandled it and the runners were safe. And I think two runs ended up scoring in that first inning. And Hauk, three runs, excuse me. Hauk didn't need, he had his own problems later on. It just wasn't a good start for him, but it was his second start in a row against the Angels. So, you know, sometimes that happens, you know, they recently got a look at you, and that wasn't the case with Reed Detmers though. Seeing him two times quick didn't help us any. That guy's just nasty. But getting back to Reyes, it's just, I watched the Angels turn multiple double plays that game, and I'm just getting jealous. I'm like, man, remember how routine double plays used to be in Boston? And now it's like holding your breath and, you know, lots of errors. So, you know, coming into Friday, we had 19 errors. That's nine more than we were the previous season with that many games. So the three hits Reyes got, that's good. I mean, at least he contributed there. If he's not hitting and he's causing errors, I mentioned this on the midweek show, that's a major net negative here with guys in your lineup. And so hopefully those kids will be up sooner. Apparently all of our big three are crushing it right now in Portland. So they won't be up this year, most likely, but hopefully it's going to be the help we need potentially next year.
Yeah, the reports out of Portland are, you know, the second most talented minor league team behind the Orioles, who obviously, you know, their Triple A team is absolutely crushing it. If you look at some of the statistical numbers that they got going on over there, it is mind-boggling. But getting back to Reyes, you know, I think this is going to be a theme for the season, unfortunately, with guys like him. You know, that 4A to maybe low-level major league players, we're going to talk about a couple other individuals that kind of fall into this bucket. Guys that are trying to make a name for themselves that kind of have a little bit of staying power in the major leagues, but maybe don't have, you know, that bona fide major league, I guess we'll call it ability. They're pressing a little bit, right? And it's going to come out in these moments when they have the opportunity to make a play, or they're going to come up to bat in a big situation. You know, Reyes does put bat on ball a lot. He gets, you know, a lot of singles. I feel like he is the prototypical warning track power, because I've seen a couple of balls that he hits. I'm like, oh, man, that's got to be gone, right? And the left fielder takes a couple steps back and catches it right before the monster. And I'm just like, oh, what a tease that would be. But, you know, it's tough to bag on a guy when you don't necessarily need him to be one of the main contributors on a team. And, you know, this is going to be a similar motif to the dud that I picked for this series as well. You know, at least he was able to contribute offensively. The defensive woes, I think, are something that's plaguing the entire team at the moment. You know, I think we're undefeated when we don't commit an error, or maybe we've only lost one game. But, you know, all of these major league teams are too good to be given extra outs to, and we definitely aren't good enough to be affording other teams additional at-bats. With that being said, though, Terry, who is your dud for the series?
Mine is John Henry, and not for the reasons we talked about last week. I'm not going to go into how crappy of an owner he is because of the team we currently have. The reason he's my dud is because he skipped out on Larry Lucchino's funeral. Now, I guess he was a little under the weather, but still, I mean, this isn't, you know, the height of COVID anymore. Larry Lucchino, I mean, he was a polarizing guy, as we've covered in the last week and a half, but he really built this house. He installed Theo Epstein, and unfortunately Sam Kennedy came over in that too. What didn't nearly have the role back then that he does now, but it was his influence that helped bring in those big stars. Now, Henry obviously gave him the blessing and Epstein to to start targeting these guys to make us a, you know, a big league powerhouse. But man, to skip out on that guy was so critical to everything that happened, you know, especially from 04 to 13. And John Henry just can't get anything right from a public relations standpoint. I sarcastically said in the war room, if you're going to be this bad, you may as well just be bad at everything and stay consistent, because that's what it is. How many executives leave Boston and have good things to say about it? Theo Epstein admitted on his way back in a couple months ago that he never really spoke to John Henry after he left for the Cubs. I think the key word was frosty. The relationship was frosty. And when I tweeted about this whole, you know, Lucchino funeral thing earlier, someone asked me, well, you know, why would Theo Epstein come back? Why would he want him back? And my response was, when your credibility is on the floor, you may as well go bring back the guy who gave you the most credibility. So I think that's a big reason why Theo's back. But it seems like the second you leave Boston, you're dead to John Henry. He's got no use for you, and he doesn't seem to care about what you did for him and how impressive you were when you did it. So another thing Lucchino gets a lot of credit for is a lot of the renovations around Fenway, you know, the monster seats and, you know, several upgrades throughout the last 20 years. So, I mean, his fingerprints are everywhere around this organization. So, man, major whiff by John Henry.
Charlie?
I mean, it's pretty embarrassing that you can't attend the funeral of one of your former colleagues and maybe good friends or friends, but you had no problem making it to a football game to see, you know, Liverpool play. You weren't feeling well, but you were at Fenway just a couple days before. But it's okay. I mean, your wife showed up. So, I mean, she was there on behalf of both of you. I think, Terry, you're absolutely right. You hit it right on the head. There's not too much to add. It's a horrible look. And it's a little bit embarrassing. So now you're kind of left wondering, was there something behind the scenes that we didn't, you know, do we not know everything? Either way, regardless, appearances should matter. And it's an awful look that they weren't there. I mean, that's it. Perception is reality. And when you don't, my reality is that you don't care, or you thought something else was a higher priority. You wanted to go to a soccer game or football game over a former colleague who was instrumental in bringing your first World Series in a very long time. You couldn't make it? Something was that important? So to me, I just don't buy it. I think it's a terrible look. Cody?
I think an unfortunate motif with this ownership and, you know, with the Red Sox in general is whenever you leave this organization, they're going to badmouth you on the way out, right? You know, whether it be a former manager, a former player, a former front office individual, whenever you leave, it's, oh, you know, there was disagreements or they didn't align or, you know, they were trying to get out or, you know, whatever the story may be. I mean, and we literally talked about it at the top of this episode, right? The most humane thing we can do is be there for one another and to be present. You know, if somebody is struggling, if an individual is going through it, you know, we have the capability, the compassion. That's what differentiates us from other species, to be there for one another. And to not show up for a funeral, I mean, that's borderline inexcusable. You know, unfortunately, I had a former coworker pass away very recently at the young age of 30. And you know, my center lead got together a couple of individuals from our team that worked with him previously. We got a group of people to go together. You know, we no longer worked with this individual, and, you know, we still made an appearance at the celebration of life. We got flowers. We sent a note from the team, and it didn't take that much effort. It wasn't this big to do. It was the right thing to do. And, you know, it's a real bummer to see I guess the captain of the ship behaved so poorly in such a public manner, and it's just a real bummer all the way around. Gary?
Yeah, you bring up an excellent point there, and just imagine if John Henry did show up at the funeral, who would be a bigger presence than him just kind of walking in? And his presence, in a way, validates everything impressive that Lucchino did in his life, and he's not there to do that. So he's just a cold-hearted man. That's what it seems like from the outside looking in.
A real bummer indeed, and this is going to be a very heavy season for the Red Sox, obviously, with the loss of Tim Wakefield. They got the patches. I thought the ceremony was done very well. They were able to make a tip of the cap to both. It's the small things, right? Everybody can make grand gestures here and there, but it's, are you present for your fellow man on the day-to-day basis? Are you there for them on the small things? That's, the character of a true individual. Was there anything else that either one of you wanted to mention on John Henry? And nope. All right. We'll bring it back to baseball for the final dud of this segment. And for me, it is David Hamilton. I'm going to keep it short, maybe not so sweet. 2-for-10, one hit, one walk. Scored 2 runs, which is nice. Made some pretty nifty plays at short as well, but 6 strikeouts, a couple of booted balls. As we mentioned with Pablo Reyes, this could be your classic 4A player, maybe low-level major league player. They're moving this guy around a bit. They're letting him know one day he's in the lineup, one day he's not in the lineup. This is a guy that needs consistent playing time, and he'll have that opportunity at short now with the Story injury. Hopefully he can kind of build on it. He had an electric debut with that very important home run. Don't want to bash on the guy too much. We haven't really seen a sample size on him large enough to say, hey, is this indicative of the type of player that he is or the type of player that he's going to be? We don't know yet, right? But it wasn't a very great weekend for the guy. What are you going to do? Hopefully we can just kind of move past it, kind of get our mind right, get into a more consistent routine, more consistent playing time, find a rhythm and move forward. Charlie, any thoughts on David Hamilton?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to David Hamilton, I mean, 1-for-10, 6 punchouts, that's tough. The sombrero in game 3 had an error, did steal a base, and really he's here for one reason. That's to steal bases, and he wouldn't have a place on this team if Trevor Story was still here. So I think that's something else that you have to kind of keep in mind when we talk about David Hamilton. Do I expect him to light up the Christmas tree week in, week out? No. Do I expect him to be the saving grace that we need at short? No. Do I think he's a fine plug every once in a while until we do get a proper shortstop there and we do have somebody that's available who could play short, but not named David Hamilton? I think he would be a perfect candidate to be that spell guy. And yeah, he may get better with more playing time, but I don't think that's going to drastically change his outlook. Like, I don't see him as, 5-tool player. I don't see him banging, 20 home runs in a season. I see him stealing 20 bases in a season if he's given the opportunity to be that, pinch running specialist and play, once every couple of days. But, I mean, my outlook on David Hamilton isn't that high, and it's no crack to him. It's just that's not what we expected from him. So hopefully he can right the ship and have a better week. If, he only plays 2 games and gets 1 hit, it'll be better than what he did in this series.
Terry?
Do you guys remember how we got David Hamilton? We traded Hunter Renfroe to get him, Alex Benellis, and Jackie Bradley. So I've been kind of pissed off since he got here, just due to the circumstances. And the only reason he's on the roster and somewhat relevant right now is because we're incompetent. He's not a Major League Baseball player. He's not a shortstop. And a lot of things had to go badly wrong for him to be up here. So I can't wait for the Hamilton era to come to an end.
Thank you for that gentle reminder. I couldn't remember if he was part of that one or not. I wasn't going to lie and say, oh, yeah, that's exactly what it was. But I do remember looking back at it, him and Benellis, he was the super speedy guy. that was the guy that was super, super fast. And if you look at his numbers a couple of years ago, he had like 60 or 70 stolen bases with Portland, 22, I think, or 21. I think it was 22. And that was it. Like, I just think he's still got, by the time he's in the majors and he's like really figuring it out and doing damage, he'll be 31, 32, at which case speed won't be a factor and he won't be a factor. So I unfortunately think that his thing, it's kind of like, you know, David Hamilton's like Billy Hamilton. Do you guys remember that guy for the Cincinnati Reds a couple years ago? Guy was lightning fast. Had 100 stolen bases in a season written all over him. The problem was he couldn't hit worth a lick. So that's the problem with someone who's got super speed. You know, you can run as fast as Usain Bolt, but if you can't get on base, then what's the point? So I think that Hamilton, you know, it's a gimmick player, you know? I don't want to, you know, compare him to other players that we've had that are kind of gimmick players, but there's one that's on my mind and I'm going to remain thankful because of him, we broke a curse. So I'll just say that.
Praise be Vaughn Grissom. Hopefully, you know, those hamstring issues are behind him and he is on his way back. Terry, any dishonorable mentions that you would like to mention at this moment?
Super quick. Tanner Houck, as we mentioned, 5 2/3 innings, gave up 12 hits and only struck out 2. Only charged with 4 of the 7 runs. So defense let him down early on, but he did himself no favors beyond that. Also for dishonorables, I mean, still Rafaela, not super great. Only 1 for 10. The one thing I will say, though, only one strikeout. So if you're looking for a shred of positivity, I guess it would be that. And then Jaron Duran, 1 for 9. Seems like he's cooling off a little bit. He did draw 3 walks, which is a lot for him in any series. So and only struck out 2. So hopefully this Cleveland series kind of gets him back on the horse. But no others besides them.
And in their notes or tidbits that either one of you would like to mention tonight? Nope. We will wrap there then. Thank you all and take care.